Do you ever feel like you're always on? Your phone is blowing up with notifications, you have commitments to friends and family, and not to mention work. Sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. It's a crisp and refreshing beer that even tells you it's cold when the mountains on the bottles and cans turn blue. When I need to hit reset, I grab a Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/BlueWire. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hello, Marlins fans, and welcome to a brand new episode of Swings and Mishes. Before I get into all the action with Craig, stick with me for just a minute here as I tell you about our new sponsor, TicketRev. I think you're really going to like them. TicketRev is the first ever reverse marketplace for event tickets. So what that means is this. Buyers go on to TicketRev.com and create bids on events by simply choosing their preferred seating location and naming their offer price. Sellers are then able to see those bids and accept a bid matching the ticket's location and sell instantly. No more having to list on StubHub, Facebook, or wherever else for tickets to games or concerts. So there's advantages for both parties here. If you're the seller, you get not only a better commission than the rest of those sites, but you can sell your tickets instantly. You never have to list them on sale again. And if you're the buyer, you now have increased flexibility. You can choose your seat and you can name your price. It's better ticket deals, and buyers finally can help determine their own pricing. Plus, we have a deal for you right now. A promo code on TicketRev.com. And that promo code, as always, is SWINGS. So all you need to do is go to TicketRev.com. That's TicketRev.com. And use the promo code SWINGS for $20 off your first bid. That's $20 off your next tickets to a Marlins game. Guys, that pays for parking itself. Just go to TicketRev.com and use our promo code SWINGS. And we'll see you out there at Lone Depot Park. Now, let's get to the podcast. Hello, Marlins fans, and welcome to a very special episode of Swings and Mishes right after the MLB trade deadline. I'm your co-host and producer, Jeremy Taché, joined, as always, by Craig Mish, who was all over the MLB trade deadline for the Marlins yesterday and the days prior. Craig, any sort of initial thoughts before we get into the nitty and gritty of these Marlins trades?
Absolutely wild deadline. Just beyond anything that I possibly could have expected. And I guess that the waiver trade deadline had something to do with that, with no more trades, I guess. But we like to complain a lot about baseball and getting things wrong. But my gosh, that was as fun a deadline as I can ever recall in terms of the trades, in terms of the trade. Now, for me personally, it was not nearly as much fun. As very early in the afternoon, I'm doing my show on Sports Grid, and people probably, you know, have no idea like what's going on. My son ended up having some allergic reaction, like literally as all of this is going on, I had to, rush him to the emergency room, and half of the trades are being done with me basically sitting right there. So like an absolutely, and you know, I don't mention a lot of personal stuff ever, like on social media or here, but just like a scary time. And here I am trying to navigate that as well. So I hope I did a good enough job for everyone out there, given the circumstances of it. I was very bummed out not to go Friday night to the game, because I definitely was going, but family definitely took precedent there. Now, as far as the trades are concerned, Jeremy, I can't wait to get into them here, because I definitely think there's a lot to unpack on trades and trades that did not happen. And I would invite all of you who are listening to this to go over to the Herald column from me and Barry Jackson that is out right now, where you can read more about some other things that are going on with the Marlins as well.
Yeah, and the good news is the little man's okay, so we're doing all right here. But as we get into these trades, let's just sort of do this chronologically and start right at the very beginning. The first trade was the blockbuster trade for the Marlins, it turned out, which was on Wednesday. They traded Starling Marte to the Oakland Athletics in exchange for Jesus Luzardo. They did pay, the reports were that the Marlins paid the rest of Starling Marte's contract in order to be able to get Luzardo, that specific prospect. Craig, what were your thoughts on that one-for-one deal with Oakland?
I think that they had an opportunity with several other teams to get prospects back, but they had a more longer term view of it. And look, I'm not telling you anything that you don't know, that there were, they know that at some point they're going to be trading possibly multiple prospects on the pitching side to acquire bats. And they basically got another pitcher back. Now, one part of what I do is, and especially during the deadline, is I am polling a lot of people on these trades, inside baseball, outside baseball, like all, like it's a nonstop week for me when these things are happening. So on the Luzardo trade, it seems like most of the responses on that were, and again, I trust, I mean, I can give you my opinion, but I trust other people more than myself when it comes to this, was that a pretty strong calculated risk by the Marlins. They probably could have gotten better prospects that may turn out to be big league players, but they took a big swing essentially in hoping that Luzardo is the prospect that he came up with Oakland. I'm also told that Luzardo was available to other teams as well at this trade deadline. So Oakland clearly had fallen out of favor with him for whatever reason. That doesn't make them right at all. I feel like the A's are an extremely well-run organization, and they tend to make a lot of right moves, but that should not shake your confidence at all in Luzardo, who will get with Scott Aldred, who seems to be their new pitching whisperer. And the evidence would show that based on all of these guys who have come up. He's in the minor leagues. He usually works with guys. They have Mel Stottlemyre there as well. So that deal in particular, I think probably, as it turns out, going through it, I mean, it was the only significant trade.
Right.
And it was probably the best one that they made. So, but we'll see. Obviously, we're going to have to play the result on that one. But most people feel like the Marlins did okay there. It was worth taking the risk on Luzardo for Marte.
Right. Simply one of those high upside moves when you're trading away a guy who is going to be a rental in Oakland for the rest of the season, to be able to end up with someone who at one time was being touted. I mean, before 2020, as a prospect, there were articles out there of, oh, this guy could be a dark horse Cy Young, right? So when the hype is there on that type of prospect, seems worth the risk. But we'll move.
Good grade there.
Yeah.
Good
we'll move to the next trade that the Marlins made later that afternoon, and that was with Houston. They sent Yimi García out to Houston in exchange for sort of swingman, long reliever, short reliever, Austin Pruitt, but more importantly, outfielder Brian De La Cruz, the 24-year-old who was really tearing it up at the AAA level so far this season. So that trade, Yimi García for De La Cruz and Pruitt, what are your thoughts here, Craig?
Yeah, I reported earlier that day, it seemed like a lot of teams were interested in García. I'm not sure really why, but it seemed like there were. García to me was a de facto closer only because, you know, the signing of Bass did not and has not worked out to this point. So look, with the specifics in terms of that trade, I can't tell you like what other team was close or anything. I didn't get deep enough on García to know that. But Houston will use García in the seventh inning, maybe the eighth. They have Presley, who's done a very good job for them in the ninth. Ironically, one of their other guys who has done a pretty good job is Ryan Stanek is there as well.
Yeah.
So now they have Stanek pitching along with Yimi García. As far as De La Cruz is concerned, you know, this is one of those trades where you basically, to me, you got something for nothing. And no disrespect to Yimi García. I was not a huge fan. I've expressed that here previously. With De La Cruz, you're looking at maybe a fourth outfielder, eventually maybe a starting outfielder. I immediately after the trade, I had guys in Houston tell me, wow, you got a great person. He is a phenomenal kid. He was fantastic in spring training, almost made the team, but really hard to make the team when you have the kind of players that Houston has there. Kyle Tucker, Michael Brantley, they wanted to give Miles Straw a shot. Ironically, they traded Straw yesterday too. So I think De La Cruz has a chance to be a starting outfielder at times, maybe a platoon outfielder at times, maybe a fourth outfielder. And he certainly showed this year in AAA that he could be that. Now, his previous numbers would show that, boy, he needed some more time maybe to get to the big leagues. But one of those trades where I think that it was kind of like a take it or leave it for me, but they got something for nothing there. So not an overwhelming grade on it, but I think they did fine. Like, I think that that's outfield depth,
right,
that is major league ready is something the Marlins don't really have.
Exactly.
So, I mean, they have guys, but I don't know that I would want to play them. I think I would rather give this guy a chance over some of the ones they have to see what he can be. And that's all this is.
Yeah, totally agree on that front completely. So we'll just move to the next deal, which was early in the afternoon on Friday, on deadline day. The Marlins did make a trade with the Atlanta Braves. They sent Adam Duvall.
Yeah. Somebody was really wrong about that one. Who was that? Boy, I think somebody said that they wouldn't trade with the Braves. That guy doesn't deserve a job. Honestly.
I don't remember who that was, but we'll certainly ignore it. Well, they did trade Adam Duvall back to Atlanta in exchange for 2014 first round pick catcher Alex Jackson. This was an interesting trade to me, Craig. Duvall for Jackson. What are your thoughts here?
Not a good trade here for the Marlins. Inside that clubhouse, we hear a lot about character. We hear about likability. We hear a lot about professionalism. And then you look at the stats, and then you look at performance. And Adam Duvall brought all of that to Miami. Mm-hmm. Adam Duvall, extremely well-liked, a professional's professional, clobbering home runs, winning games for Miami all season, only going to make a couple million the rest of the year. Would he have walked away at the end of the year? Yeah, probably he would have. But I mean, could Miami have gone to him and said, hey, instead of keeping you for seven, can we try 10?
Right.
Instead of keeping you for seven, can we try 2 years, 12 million? They never did. And he's a solid outfielder. And the player they got back in return is not a starting catcher. And the Braves are sharp. They know what they're doing. The Braves tried to get Duvall for weeks. When Acuna went down, they tried to do it right there. But the Marlins refused to make deals with Atlanta. That's why I said what I said there.
Right.
Miami. The only thing that I can guess is that Miami went all across the league, found nothing, and then Jeremy were forced to send him back to the Braves because they could get nothing for Adam Duvall. Maybe that is the case. I don't know, but I was not a fan of that trade yesterday. I think there are still 60 games left here, and if you've decided that you want to stay somewhat competitive, meaning not go 0-60, and right, you showed that with keeping Bleier, and you showed that with keeping Floro, because you could have shipped them out too. I mean, I don't know. Like, I think Duvall was the dice game there. Maybe you roll the dice, see if you can endear him and see if you could keep him here. Maybe make him a little bit of a better offer. Disappointed on that one for me. I thought, and I don't think this, maybe Jackson will work out and be a backup catcher, but and the Braves do have backup catching depth. They have William Contreras. They have another catcher, Shea Langeliers. They had Darno, but he's out for the season. So from their perspective, they gave up nothing to try and fight a little bit more this year. I was not a fan of that deal.
Yeah, I think the biggest reason I found the trade interesting was actually probably more from Atlanta's perspective, just in the fact that they really yesterday completely overhauled their roster in order to try to continue to compete in the NL East in a division that's so up for grabs as we've seen. And then Jackson, you know, like you mentioned, maybe some catching depth down the line.
That's all it is.
Probably right. And both of these moves are that. So we'll move to the John Curtis deal. And that was the last move the Marlins made. They traded John Curtis to Milwaukee for catcher Peyton Henry. He will start his career with the Marlins at the AAA level. So another sort of dishing of a reliever in exchange for some more catching depth.
Yeah, I think the reason why Curtis was the last to go is because, you know, when you have an organization, you're going to agree and disagree on different things. I think Curtis had some love inside the organization to potentially stay and instead move Flora or move Bleier, and because Curtis can open. Jeremy's actually been pretty consistent amongst all those guys from the beginning of the season. But you know, for whatever reason, he was the odd man out in the end. And the catcher that they got back seems to be amongst the three that they got in these deals outside of Lizardo is maybe the most upside there. So potentially, what are we looking at here with him? A backup catcher at the big league level, someone that's definitely going to need a little bit more AAA time for sure. But what this signals to you is that two things. Number one, they absolutely needed more catching depth. It was insane how thin they were there. And number two, that they're ready to move on from Jorge Alfaro, and they've identified that. It may not happen right now, but I think it will happen soon. I think they're going to give Jackson a chance to play. Maybe we'll see this kid play at the end of the season, but they publicly will never say it. They have moved on, and they are going to upgrade that position. The other thing that I would say, and this is not a negative at all on this trade with Milwaukee, but let's keep in mind, there's a reason why David Stearns a couple of years ago won Executive of the Year. And you know, the trades that they make, the acquisitions they make, Christian Yelich, Willy Adames, like, I mean, this guy knows what he's doing here. He's really good at his job. Why would he give this player up? I don't know. Is there a chance the Marlins got the better of it? Sure. Is David Stearns the same guy that didn't want Anthony Bender and then the Marlins got him? Absolutely he is.
Right.
But let's all keep these things in mind. Let's not just bash other organizations for giving up players. They know what they're doing too. So all in all, in terms of the trade deadline, I think I mentioned this late last night or the night, whatever, on social media. I'm going to grade them here in terms of what they did as just getting a C. I don't think it was better than that, Jeremy. I think that they could have done a little bit better. I'm not sure why Blyer wasn't traded. I'm not sure why Flora wasn't traded. I feel like they could have got a better return on Adam Duvall. I like the trade with Marte. I'm okay with the trade with Houston and Milwaukee. But I suppose for people who were sort of upset that something big didn't happen, well, what were we told publicly? We were told publicly by Marlins CEO Derek Jeter that the team was not sellers, that the team was trying to get better. That's what we were told. And when you set that sort of expectation and you come back with two unknown catchers, an unknown outfielder, and a pitcher whose ERA was six, like you can't convey that to you here. So I think it was obvious that the Marlins were sellers, and it's fine to say that. Hey, we were 15 games under 500. We couldn't beat the Pirates. Like, we're gonna have to do better, and it's gonna start by moving these guys at the end of the season. And I think that would, and personally, with all due respect, I think that would have been a much easier way to convey, not get my hopes up that something was really genuinely going to make the team better at the trade deadline, because I don't think anything as of right now made them a better team in 2022 and 2021. And I can't say that they're going to be better in 2022 based on these trades, because I don't know.
Right.
So they were sellers and they sold and we move on.
Right. And when you talk about making the team better, like whether or not these trades ultimately make the organization better in the long run, irrelevant to this season, Adam Duvall and Starling Marte and Yimi Garcia is your closer. I mean, these guys were really productive for the Marlins, and they're no longer there. And so you're a worse major league team right now than you were. So to make any sort of statement otherwise would be inaccurate. If you want to say, hey, the organization got better, that's fine by you. That's your prerogative. And look, adding some of that depth is important. What you and I have sort of beleaguered on this podcast pretty much all season is that catching depth really killed the Marlins at the beginning of the year. They were looking at the scrap heap to try to make some decisions to try to add
people.
And that extra outfield depth, even if Brian De La Cruz is not a starter long-term, if he can be a productive fourth or fifth outfielder who you're not panicked to go to, you know, we've watched the Marlins go to their minor league system over the last couple of years, but particularly this season. One major criticism that actually you and I have both had is they weren't prepared for when guys went down with injury. A lot of these moves yesterday almost feel like that, to make sure that in the future, when guys go down with injury, that they're prepared to have at least replacement level quality players within their system. And that doesn't necessarily make you better today, but it feels like the type of tweaks that you make if you are going to try to make some sort of other moves to make yourself better this winter, possibly.
Yeah, I talked to somebody last night who I thought made a pretty good point, and I guess, you know, listens to some of the things that I say, not to make opinion, but just listens to some of my commentary.
Yeah.
saying, somebody said to me, you know, you've said now for the last couple of months that your frustration is with them, is with the Marlins not moving on and just keep going back to the same players over and over again. Would, and then the question was asked, would you say that this signals more of that than anything else? And I would say yes.
Absolutely.
And I would say yes. This signals that maybe they have finally said, okay, it is time for Brian Miller to get his shot and De La Cruz to get his shot. And we're going to have a different catcher. Like the shots may not work, but to me, that is a critical part of this organization, is to move on from things that are not working. And maybe this is more of a signal of that. At least we can hope that that's what it is, Jeremy.
And yeah, that's all I've wanted to try to take it as. And hopefully, like you mentioned, even guys who were already within the organization, and we talked about like Bryson Brigman before, maybe we see some of him in the last couple of months, right? Some of these guys who haven't gotten their shot within the organization and now bringing in some outsiders, hey, go ahead and try to take advantage of these last couple months. Put yourself in position to succeed going into 2022, and they can evaluate from there.
Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. And I love it because Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources that were once reserved for big businesses. So upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. I don't talk about it a ton, but I have a fishing company. 5 years ago this month, my best friend Aaron and I started a bass fishing weight company called Woo Tungsten, because woo is the sound you make when you catch a giant bass. So we sell tungsten weights for bass fishing, and Shopify has made it so incredibly easy. They have all the tools and the resources that we need. No matter how big or small your business is, they just make it so effortless. And like mine, Shopify powers over 1.7 million businesses from first sale to full scale. And you can reach customers online and across social networks with their ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. And you can gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond, which is something we use a ton. More than just a store, Shopify grows with you. Go to shopify.com/bluewire, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business today with Shopify. Go to shopify.com/bluewire. Right now, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Shopify.com/bluewire.
If you don't have players on the field with the right skills, whether it's breakaway speed or elite playmaking ability, you're going to have a tough time winning. The same goes for your business. Indeed is a fast, simple way to make sure you're hiring MVPs. Start hiring right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through April 30th. If you're hiring, you need Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applicants that meet your must-have requirements, or else you don't pay. Go to Indeed.com/BlueWire to claim your $75 credit before April 30th. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined, according to Talent Nest. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But now, this is where it gets interesting in this conversation with us, because what we can delve into is what did not happen for the Marlins. And that's not just the trades of Richard Bleier or Dylan Floro and relievers who didn't get moved. There was some interesting stuff out there, Craig, that you and I have spoken about. And so I would love to just kind of dive into what was out there for the Marlins that might have been the splashy move that didn't happen.
Yeah, I think Kim Eng said it pretty well on the field on Friday, that they had a lot of people calling them about trades. I feel that's, from what I understand, accurate. There's also an element that goes into reporting, and I've mentioned how big the trade deadline is for me and how big the winter is for me, because that's when I'm exhausting all of my relationships, friendships, and personal business acquaintances during this time. Mm-hmm. So while, yes, I am dealing with the Marlins, of course, I am dealing with so many other people and executives, which is why guys like Ken Rosenthal and Jeff Passan and Robert Murray and Joel Sherman, like, I mean, the contacts, the Rolodex that these guys have beyond this, you know, it makes me feel like silly to have what I have. Like, I could never do what they, maybe I can, I don't know. I don't want to sell myself short. Sure. Maybe one day I can, but I'm not trying, but I'm trying to focus in on all of my contacts to find out what the Marlins are doing. And they did a great job hiding it. Clearly, I had no idea that Starling Marte was going to Oakland until like an hour before he went. So part of the non-trades is more intriguing because I'm doing the same thing and finding out, wow, this almost happened. So I knew that they were chasing a center fielder. I had put that out so many times over the last couple of weeks because I knew that that was their pursuit, but I did not know who the center fielder was. So as I'm doing this and sort of, you know, every once in a while I'm eliminating a guy from the pool. Like I have a pool of players that I think are possible, and through different contacts, I'm able to deduce and get rid of one team at a time. Okay, no, yes, player, no. I was doing those spaces. You know, I still thought some players were involved. Then, of course, somebody hears me say Cedric Mullins. I get a text. It is definitely not Cedric. Right. Okay, he's gone. Byron Buxton, okay, he's gone too. So it makes it easier just by eliminating players. It's much better. So it comes down to a day last week, and I get a notification that the Los Angeles Angels basically have their top decision makers in Pensacola to watch Max Meyer. So, okay. All right. Now we've begun something here. Yep. Now I know that the Angels are involved. They are in some way. This could be it. I figured it out. Now it could be, but I don't know who, because clearly they have two center fielders, Jeremy, that are out there. In Joe Adell and Brandon Marsh. Those are the two that they have as possibilities. So in talking about other players like Brian Reynolds and Nick Senzel, and I'm going through all of my possibilities here, looking at Seattle too, I finally am able to speak to somebody who tells me that Joe Adell essentially is not being traded from the Angels. He's having a great year in AAA. If they're going to trade him, it's going to be like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to use Jacob deGrom, but it's like they are going to shoot for the sky with that guy.
Got it.
But maybe they'd be more willing to trade Brandon Marsh. So in having discussions and going back and forth, started getting some confirmations later in the week that was the trade, that those are the two players that are being talked about in the trade. The Angels end up going to Pensacola. They feel good enough seeing Max Meyer pitch on a bad weather day, I think, too, that Meyer is their target from Miami. And the Marlins have targeted Brandon Marsh as their guy. And so essentially the Angels, before they make a deal, like a blockbuster type deal to trade, I think their third best prospect, top 50 guy, they want to go see the pitcher. The pitcher throws, they end up liking what they see. And now the trade gets really hot, Jeremy. And that's when you see me on Wednesday saying, my gosh, like, I think this has got a shot. And do I think this is a good trade or not? I don't know, but this is going to be fun to discuss. I mean, here they are. They're ready to trade their first round pick for 2020 for their center fielder of the future. It's got to be, they got to think that in order to make this trade. And by the way, Marsh's big league numbers, like a lot of rookies, haven't looked all that great.
Yeah.
But everyone I'm talking to out West, they love Brandon Marsh. My gosh, the character, makeup, fast defense, left-handed, projects as a starting everyday, you know, outfielder. Angels love him. And then for something happens, and I'm not exactly sure, but I believe the Angels, I don't know if they got cold feet. I don't want to say that, but I think the Angels may have said, you know what? We're at the deadline. Let's see if we can catch Miami a little desperate here because we know how much they love the player. Let's push it a little further. Let's see if we can get a little something else. The Marlins, that was the end. Marlins are basically, from what I'm told, again, could be wrong. I'm not in the room. I don't know.
Right.
Marlins, hey, you want this deal? It is going to be Meyer. It's for Marsh, just like Gallen for Jazz.
Yep.
Take it, leave it, done. Angels, do not call back. Late in the day on Friday, about an hour and a half, I don't even care about any of the other trades the Marlins are making. I'm just, is this happening? Is right. this happening? Is this happening? I'm calling everybody that I know. Is it happening? Is it close? And I'm told, don't know. Oh, maybe not. Oh, and then three o'clock Eastern comes. Oh, we're fading here. I'm bummed out. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're not going to do it. Something happened. I'm going to have to find out. 4 o'clock comes, it goes by.
Yeah.
So there you have it. I think, you know, people have asked me, Jeremy, is this a trade that they could revisit during the winter? Absolutely. I think mm-hmm. that this still could happen. Max Meyer is a great young pitcher who, even if he's not a one in the big leagues,
goodness,
and maybe some people don't think he is, I mean, he certainly has a chance to be a two or a three.
Yeah.
At the big league level, Brandon Marsh has a chance to be a star in the outfield, but he's blocked by some other guy with the Angels. I don't know who he is. Some center fielder. I'm not sure. I've never heard of him before. So, I mean,
yeah, their outfield isn't full of anybody.
That's where we're at. And given the fact that he is so high on their board and given the fact that Meyer is so high on the Angels board, if they can work this out in December, I think we have a fun trade to discuss again. And by the way, one that, as you're probably listening to this, some of you are thinking, no way, I would never trade Max Meyer for Brandon Marsh. Some of you are thinking, my gosh, we got to get Brandon Marsh for Max Meyer. That's what makes a great trade. And that's what makes the conversation so much fun. So everyone can have fun with that. And that's almost what happened. They also, and also as a side note, the only other player of relevance in this conversation, so it could be something again to watch in the winter, but nothing close, was Brian Reynolds of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Brian Reynolds was of interest to Miami. Brian Hayes is there too. Reynolds is essentially like the last man standing in Pittsburgh, like the real Muto of Miami at the time. Sure. They tore everything down. And so you can understand they still need to sell tickets. They got to put somebody on their billboards. The Marlins were never going to give what the Pirates were asking for. But again, the conversation happened. Maybe it's something that changes. You guys know how I feel about Jacob Stallings, if they could package those two together. But you're legitimately talking about like three pitchers going back to Pittsburgh. And then now you're changing the conversation because you're leaving yourself a little bit thin in that respect. So, but the first trade was definitely almost there, Jeremy. Really interesting to see that almost happen.
Well, and it's interesting, the Marsh for Meyer concept, because like you mentioned, and hey, for what it's worth, we had these conversations dating back weeks and weeks ago about could the Marlins trade or try to trade from a position of organizational strength with their pitching and do something similar like what they did Gallen for Jazz. And at the time, both, although Gallen was producing at the major league level and, you know, Jazz was still at the minor league level, to know that you were swapping those prospects, neither of those guys, for what it's worth at the time, was hyped up the way that both Max Meyer and Brandon Marsh are right now within their respective organizations. So that would have been a splashy deal. That would have been a big deal. But like you mentioned, going back to it in the winter now, and it makes Kim Ng's remarks from yesterday, you know, make that much more sense, which is we felt like the work that we did over the last few days put us in position to where we know what to expect this winter and what people's values are. And so even if that's where things are, right, they now at least have a better understanding of what the value is for a player like Brian Reynolds, for a player like Brandon Marsh, for their own player and Max Meyer, you know, that can only lead you into a better position this upcoming winter, theoretically.
Yeah. And by the way, my work on this trade is nowhere done. The Marlins and Angels probably are nowhere done too. I mean, the Angels just traded Andrew Heaney away too. Like when they made that trade, I was like, wow, this maybe has a chance again. Boy, the Angels pitching, as much pitching as the Marlins have, the Angels have none.
Like, and they drafted 20 pitchers.
Yeah. Like, so there is a perfect match. They have two months to continue to discuss this thing. I am now discussing this with other people, sort of, you know, getting my gauge on it too privately.
Sure.
And let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. I think that's why, for everyone who is, and hopefully that changes your opinion of the Marlins organization being so upset. I will say that, like, they worked really, really hard to do that.
Right.
You know, and whether or not you like that trade or not, it showed that they were interested in upgrading the team. But I think they set that expectation. And then when it doesn't happen, it's like, it would have just been much easier just to say, yeah, we're selling, and right, then surprise us like they have the last couple of years, getting Marte, getting Jazz. Mm-hmm. And by saying that we did those sort of things, it sets you up to do it again. And then when, right, you don't, you're going to be disappointed. So why set that expectation? That's the only thing that I was like so perplexed by going into this. But there's no question these guys and girls worked very, very hard at the deadline. And that is part of my grade. That is part of my conversation. And knowing that the attempt was there, these guys were just not sitting around eating pizza. Like they tried to make a huge deal,
right,
and get the center field, and it just didn't happen. So that's why I'm not giving them a failing grade at the trade deadline. If I knew that there was nothing, it would be a D. Yeah.
Right.
Like it would be like, what did you do? You just gave away their guys for, right, like a couple backups. Okay. Fantastic. Great job. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Washington, the Cubs, like this is how it's done. You right, tear it all the way down. You go all the way down and you rebuild. The Cubs are now going to rebuild. Miami's got to finish ahead of Washington next year. Yikes. Mm-hmm. So like that's kind of where they're at. So the part of my grade also is the disappointment. Again, you have Dylan Floro, you have Richard Blyer, all the way down. Like Andrew Chafin, all the way down. Like,
yeah,
you, John Lester, goodbye. Like anything that you can get 20 cents on the dollar for, you do it. Because if the reason why, Jeremy, is for somebody to say, well, Craig, I completely disagree, because look, we need a couple relievers to have a semblance of a competitive team,
sure,
in the second half. Okay, cool. Keep Adam Duvall.
Right.
Keep,
right,
Adam Duvall, if that, right, is the case. I mean, you literally now need a right fielder too, for sure. Yeah. Everyone knows it. So a fun deadline for sure. It was amazing to see so many moves. And I'm hopeful that next deadline, Miami is in this spot where they're the ones like the Dodgers, like the Padres, like Seattle, like mm-hmm, these teams that are back in and fighting and trying to get players. Hopefully that is the case. I know that they have their work cut out for them this winter. I think they recognize that as well. And, you know, hopefully with the way things are right now, it's, you know, the winter meetings are probably uncertain again, but sure, if they do have a winter meetings in Nashville this year, I will be there and uncovering as much as I possibly can for everybody. But that'll pretty much do it. That's
yeah,
what happened in the trade deadline.
And just to sort of wrap up my own thoughts here on how that went down, the place where I really agree with you is that it made no sense to hold on to some of these relievers. That is the space where it's like when you are breaking things down and you're trading away your probably two best bats in Marte and Duvall. It doesn't make a lot of sense to hold on to these pieces that could provide value that was no different than the value you just picked up, right? If we're going to talk about Peyton Henry as value for John Curtis, you probably, at least I assume, look, I'm not you, I'm not doing the reporting on this, but I imagine some similar value out there for guys like Blyer and Floro, you know, who could be beneficial to bullpens for teams that are competing. So why not continue to add more pieces? But a space where I am actually like oddly happy is that the Marlins not only went in on what could have been the splashy trade, but then had the confidence within the organization to not make it. And that I know sounds ridiculous, but in years past, whenever the Marlins, this is how I've always, you know, seen it, at least from, and this is from the old days, but forever, there's been how many trades because, oh, we got to get that guy right now. And to not operate out of a point of desperation at a deadline that is an arbitrary deadline. There's no need for the Marlins to add that player today as opposed to this winter. If they said no, nothing beyond Max Meyer, I'm glad there was an actual line set and not just here's more and more and more because we've identified a player that we want. So seeing a team have value for certain players and execute it the way that they want, whether it ends up working out or not, I'm just like grateful to see a semblance of a a plan, a strategy. And whether it works out long-term or not, we still have to see. This offseason now becomes the moment for the Marlins to make those moves to add to what they've put together here and take some of these pieces that have come up and shown they can compete and now really do what's necessary to put that championship level organization around them. And so we'll see what happens. It's not saying they're, you know, going to compete for World Series next year, but it's time to take those steps. And sure, we all see it. Oh no, go ahead, Greg.
One other thing, you know, the two players that weren't traded, there was some speculation on Miguel Rojas and you know, certainly you can, everyone seems to be in unison and no one wanting to see him traded. But we will dissect that in a year or two from now, mm-hmm. whether or not the offers were good enough for Rojas and whether they held on too long. We're going to have to wait and see how he plays next year. But as of right now, you know, there's no interest in trading him whatsoever. And they really didn't have a lot of great offers for Jesus Aguilar. You know, I think that they thought they were going to, because as Aguilar was sort of streaking, they thought that maybe something was going to come in that was going to blow them away. And that never happened. Right. So, you know, they also, by the way, Jeremy, a critical part for these next 2 months, in my opinion, is figuring out a way to play Lewin Diaz.
Oh,
so
yeah,
we know whether or not he could play next year. I don't know that they accomplished that at the deadline. Aggie seems to be pretty amenable to doing whatever they want to do. And I know it could be a hard conversation to have, but I think Lewin Diaz has got to play once or twice a week at first base the rest of the season.
Yeah,
I mean, how can they possibly go into next year and just making the assumption that he's your everyday first baseman and not knowing? That's a critical offensive position to have. So that's a dynamic that we'll have to watch as we go. I just wanted to throw that in there for the end.
Wholeheartedly agree. And to hopefully as we watch the Marlins in these last 2 months, what we see is a bunch of Lewin Diaz, Jazz Chisholm Jr., Jesus Sanchez, whenever he comes back. And now these additions of De La Cruz and Alex Jackson and just all these guys. All right, let's see what you can do. And that's sort of what the next couple months are on the major league level for the Marlins. But let's before we wrap up, there is other Marlins sort of front office move to talk about here with Khalil Watson, the first round pick. Greg, you've been reporting that the Marlins are close on Watson for a while now. What's the deal as of this morning? I believe the deadline is tomorrow.
Yeah, he'll be signed. It's just a matter of getting it tied up here. So, it's like everybody has this thing on the half yard line, including me, and that's kind of where it is.
Right.
So if you read between the lines there, you know that there's one thing left to do essentially before he signs on the dotted line. And in Miami, like most organizations, is a little superstitious with that. So they are basically not confirming that he's signed. He is coming to South Florida Saturday. And why would he come here if he's not going to sign? So I don't know when anyone is listening to this. You could be listening to this on Sunday. You could be listening to it next week, but just be rest assured Khalil Watson is going to sign and he's going to be in the Marlins organization. And they're going to end up having, according to at least people that I talk to, they're going to have the number one draft in all of Major League Baseball in 2021. Amazing. How about that? They're going to be number one in all of baseball in terms of their draft, which is stunning how far they've come on that one. Like that's a job well done. I mean, and even if they're not number one in some publications, they're going to end up being number two or number three. But from what I'm hearing and the people that I talk to at those publications, you know, they've basically, you know, they asked me last week, hey, is Watson going to sign? Is Watson going to sign? Because if he does, we're going to put the Marlins number one.
Amazing.
I'm like, I don't know if he's going to sign, but man, that's pretty crazy. So look for that coming. If indeed this is done, like I believe it is, wild times for sure.
Right. Well, and I guess it is worth putting those two things together, looking at both the trade deadline and the draft and thinking about how did the Marlins in the month of July make their organization better. That's kind of all we can look at. And I see $4.5 million toward Khalil Watson to get him into the organization. I see $4.5 million sent to Oakland to get Jesus Luzardo into the organization, these high upside players. It makes you at least hopeful going forward that if nationally everyone is saying, hey, look at that guy, they're in Miami, you know, that maybe the Marlins are here doing some of the right things. But Craig, any sort of final thoughts before we wrap up? You know, we mentioned all the trades that did happen, all the trades that didn't happen, the signing, any sort of thoughts here?
No, I thank everybody for following along with me during the trade deadline. Hopefully I delivered the kind of content for you guys that you like, that you enjoy. I really appreciate all of people's support. I do it for you guys clearly. You know, I do work for Sports Grid, which is my primary gig every day from 12 to 2 Eastern. And that's what is paying my bills, and everything else we do is a side hustle. So understand that I'm doing it for me, of course, because hopefully as my career continues to evolve, there are other great things that come with that. But I do understand the responsibility of doing it and appreciate everybody who's supported me through the years and doing it. Happily, I was able to break a few trades, and I'll continue to follow the organization. We'll continue to do what we do. I will say it's going to be tough to watch the next 2 months. It's going to be very, very difficult. Yeah. I would buckle up for that. It's going to be extremely difficult to watch these games, but we will continue to roll on until the end of the season. And the winter, to me, must be the most important winter since this new regime has taken over. There's no question. So this is going to be, this is it. This is the game changer coming up, or maybe not, but this has got to be the game changer for them this winter. So I hope you have a good weekend, Jeremy, and we'll see you at the ballpark.
Yeah, same to you, everyone. Everybody listening to this, thank you for following our coverage during this trade deadline and for following us at Swings and Mishes on Twitter, at Craig Mish over there, at Jeremy Taché right here. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Swings and Mishes, and we'll be back with you next week.
Get on Team Shaq with WynnBET. We're playing parlays, boosting odds, and laying the wildest prop bets. Don't miss another game. Download the WynnBET sports betting app today.
Sign up today and win $200 in free bets when you place a $10 first-time wager on a straight bet or parlay. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WynnBET is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.